but I think Auburn might have a little bit of an emotional hangover after a huge performance at College Station. Bo Nix, he's going to be the real deal in a year or two. He's pretty darn good now. But when Mississippi State defensively starts applying some pressure, I think they could do enough to keep it in single digits.
Yeah, we're finally going to disagree, which makes me happy. I'm going to take Auburn. That is a lot of points. That is a lot of points. But in the last six games at Jordan-Hare Stadium against the spread, Auburn is 6-0 at home. Meanwhile, Mississippi State is 1-5 against the spread in their six road games. Bo Nix has proven that he can compete. He's already won that big game in Oregon. He went on the road last week as an underdog and won at Kyle Field and really proved that, yeah, I agree with you. I think he's the real deal. And Auburn's defensive line is the best in college football, so I think they're going to be able to stifle that Mississippi State running game, and they're going to make them one-dimensional. And I think Auburn proves they're a true national title-type contender at that point.
I tell you what's crazy. I remember watching Bo Nix's father play at Auburn. Came to Baton Rouge when Jerry DiNardo was bringing back the magic. That makes me old. All right, let's finish up on the college football side. Yeah, hey, if I'm old, guess what that makes you? Let's go number 24, Kansas State, leaving the Little Apple, and they're going to play at Oklahoma State. The unranked team in this one, Dino, Oklahoma State, 4.5-point favorites. Hit me.
Yeah, I'm probably getting baited, but I'm going to officially call them my team. I'm going to take my Kansas State Wildcats to go there and not only win, I mean, not only cover, but to win this game. Kansas State is, they don't turn the ball over. They've got the fewest penalties in the Big 12, and they can actually keep up, and they can actually score some points. Oklahoma State has the worst defense. They commit penalties. They're undisciplined. And I love Kansas State here. They've proven they can go on the road. They already went to Starkville and beat Mississippi State this year. So give me my Wildcats to not only cover, but win straight up.
And you're making me feel better because we disagree again. Oklahoma State showed that they could go on the road and play pretty darn well. They lost at Texas 36-30 last week. Believe it or not, I consider that a mild victory. They return home in front of that rowdy crowd. Maybe one of the first real opportunities at T. Boone Pickens Stadium to celebrate T. Boone Pickens. Yeah, I think that's a bit of a trap for Kansas State. I got Oklahoma State to win this one by five or more. All right, let's go to the NFL. And we'll go lightning round here. Thursday night football first. Philly at Green Bay. Pack. 5.5-point favorites. I'll take them at home. I know it's not desperation time for Philly, but they still need this game at 1-2. I don't think they get it. They've got receivers that are going on the injured list. They've got others that are dropping balls. Local firemen in Philly are making fun of their wide receivers. Give me Green Bay with a rejuvenated defense to win this one pretty convincingly.
I'm going to take Philly. And I think Philly could honestly win this game. But I'm definitely going to take them with the point. Green Bay's been doing it with their defense. They're only scoring about 19 points a game. So if you're only scoring 19 points, it's tough to cover five and a hook. Philly's desperate. I love their head coach and Doug Peterson. Philly's two losses this year are only by a combined 7 points. So give me Philly plus the points.
Cleveland at Baltimore. Ravens are 7-point favorites. You first.
Yeah, I'm going with another dog here. I'm going to take Cleveland. It's kind of similar to the last one. I mean, Baltimore is 2-1. And they've shown flashes, but their wins were against miserable Miami and the Arizona Cardinals. And there's a reason Cleveland had that hype. Cleveland has the talent. It's a big divisional game. I think 7 points is way too much. So give me Cleveland to cover that seven.
I do think Baltimore might be the superior team, but I'm with you. And this, I think, is my favorite line of the week, the one I maybe feel the best about. I like Cleveland here as well. They have lost to good teams. I think they perform a lot better in this one. I like Cleveland to cover the touchdown. Same type of spread, but for the road team this time. Pats, 7-point favorites on the road at Buffalo, a matchup of undefeateds in Orchard Park. Of course, I have the Patriots to go on the road and win by more than 7. Buffalo might find a way to sneak into the wild card round this year. Might. But there are levels to things, and they're not on Brady and Belichick's level. I like the Patriots, probably by double digits.
Yeah, I do too. I honestly don't even understand this line. You realize that the Bills are 3-30 against Tom Brady? 3-30. 3-30. So I think it goes to 3-31. The Vegas can't set a line high enough. I mean, they're covering 20 point lines. So no offense to Buffalo, I'd love to pick you, but it ain't happening. Give me the Pats.
We've taken two road teams in a row. Are we going to make it three? Kansas City, arguably the best team in football, 6.5-point favorites on the road at Detroit. You're up.
No, I'm going to take Detroit here. People are probably going to think I'm crazy because I do think Kansas City is a great team. But Detroit should be undefeated as well. I think Kansas City does win this game. But Matt Stafford, the quarterback's been playing awesome. He's finally got some weapons with Danny Amendola, Marvin Jones. And they actually have a running game led by your boy, the former Auburn running back, Kerryon Johnson. So I just think 6.5 in the NFL as a road team is just way too much when you're playing against a team that is a legit playoff contender. So I'm going to take the Lions plus the points.
Clint corrects me a million times a show. My pleasure that I get to correct you here. The Lions are undefeated. They are 2-0-1. And so you think they have a chance to stay that way. Let's find out. Hey, we're going to finish up. Let me disagree with you. Sorry, I got Kansas City. Enough said. Forgot I got to actually make a pick there. Let's go to Sunday Night Football. Dallas at New Orleans. Cowboys, 3-point favorites. This one's tough. After the way the Saints' defense and special teams played last week at Seattle, but I picked against the Saints and they won. How am I going to do anything different? I'd get run out of South Louisiana. I'm picking Dallas to cover the 3. They're probably the better team right now, even though they haven't really played anybody this season. So if nothing else, I'm going with the jinx pick here. Give me the Cowboys to cover on the road.
I got New Orleans. If you're getting kicked out, I'm moving down. I like the people. I like the culture. I like the Saints. I think the Saints are more than just Drew Brees. I think Teddy Bridgewater can keep the ship afloat. I think they are loaded all around, and they're at home in an electric atmosphere at Mercedes-Benz. So let me know when you move out. Maybe we can just exchange rent checks at that point. But, hey, who dat? Let's go.
There you go. You can have my note anytime you want it. Just not my wife and my family. Dino, always a pleasure. Enjoyed this. We'll catch up next Wednesday.
All right, man. It was a pleasure. Look forward to it.
This guy's talking about moving in. I do think South Louisiana would be in trouble if Dino were a full-time resident. All right, we do agree a couple times over. We both like Virginia, Washington, and the Raging Cajuns on the college side. On the NFL side, we like the Browns and we like the Pats on the road. Final break of the 4 o'clock hour. When we return, we'll get your reaction, everything you've heard, and we'll keep it going with the New Orleans Saints. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Back in to cap off our 4 o'clock hour. Having some fun so far on a hump day. Picks that some of them might go right. Hopefully more than, you know, the rest. With Cousin Dino there, we'll take your response to everything you've heard so far. And then we'll dive into the Saints-Cowboys matchup a bit in this segment. 706-0111, the number to play. Don't forget, our 5 o'clock hour bookended by great guests. Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle talking Astros baseball at the top of the hour. And Billy Embody closes our show out at 5:45, bye week for LSU football. But he'll give us the latest details on the Tigers trying to get healthier and then who some of the next men up will be for those not likely to be ready for Utah State and maybe the Florida game. But, Clint, I think everybody, maybe with a bit of a changed perspective on Saints-Cowboys, the way the defense played in particular, special teams, we know Thomas Morstead is a freak, one of the best punters the game has ever seen. I think we understand that there's a new sheriff in town when it comes to punt returner, kick returner. And no, not Marcus Sherrills, the guy we thought it might be coming over from the Vikings in the offseason. The rookie giveth. Yeah, he took it the way as well with a punt return touchdown and a fumble in the game against Seattle. But really and truly for me, it's the defense that stole the show and gave the Saints their second win of this season. It'll be a much different test against the Cowboys. But if that defense continues to take steps forward, Bridgewater can do more managing. They can go on longer drives. They don't have to do as many big chunk plays, and they don't have to go out and win the game necessarily on offense. That's a pretty good recipe, at least for a 6 or 7 game interim stretch.
Exactly, and especially when you're playing against a Cowboys team that hasn't had a true defensive test. I mean, you look at their opponents in the first 3 weeks, the Giants with Eli Manning, the Dallas Cowboys and the Redskins week 2 and then week 3, I mean, do we even have to mention the Miami Dolphins in that mix? So I can say, you know, with some confidence, this will be the first real test that the Cowboys have, at least on the defensive side of the football.
Let's go to Sean Payton. I want you to hear from the Saints head coach, and he addressed his starting quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater. He feels as if Bridgewater adapted very well in the game at Seattle.
Yeah, I think especially in the second quarter, third quarter, you know, he settled in, got comfortable. It's been a while since he's been in a regular season game, but it was good to see him perform.
Now we'll get Peyton's thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys. And offensively, Dak Prescott looks more like the rookie out of Mississippi State, not the guy in particular from the 2018 season. And I think this is interesting. Peyton was asked, is the Dallas offense more aggressive this year? His response.
Well, look, there's some differences there. I mean, they've made some changes coaching-wise. There's some players that have come in. They've added some key veterans. When you bring back a Witten, all right, and you bring back a few guys that can help, you know, bring that presence, I think, you know, you're seeing it. I think you're seeing an offensive line that's healthy now. It's impressive to watch.
Got a stenographer just banging it out there during the Sean Payton teleconference. I think it's as simple as three names that make the answer to that question. Yes, the Dallas offense is more aggressive. It's Cooper. I think it's Cobb. And I think it's Moore. We all know about Amari Cooper. He was probably the best receiver in football last four, five, six games of the regular season in 2018. I'm going to say Randall Cobb, but we all know that Michael Gallup and some of the others have a chance to help stretch the field as well. But I think it's Kellen Moore, the new offensive coordinator, that really is starting to get a downfield mentality in this Cowboys offense. And if you have a back like Zeke Elliott, why the heck wouldn't you do that? What we're going to do now is go out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, good to hear from you on a hump day. How are you?
Great, man. I got all the worms out of my phone, like I told you last time we spoke. The idea of Joe Burrow coming to New Orleans, it's a pipe dream, you know, but everybody has to have a dream. I get it. But as far as all the hoopla surrounding Dallas going to New Orleans and beating New Orleans, look, the only team that's going to beat New Orleans in New Orleans is New Orleans. The Zebras got away from the game last week. They let the players play, and I appreciated it. I'm not going to blame the Zebras for all New Orleans' shortcomings, but we can call a spade down here. I think that New Orleans has a legitimate chance to mop the floor with Dallas, strictly because Dallas hasn't played anyone yet.
I think what you're saying is possible. I'm not co-signing it just yet, because I do need to see the Saints against the down-in, down-out, potent rushing attack. I think forcing a fumble early from Chris Carson took some of the sting out of Seattle's run game, and you have to give the Saints D credit for that. But I still have some memories of week one dancing around in my head, and Duke Johnson, who had been in Houston for all of about 8 days, did a pretty good number on that rush defense. And so what's going to happen when arguably the league's best back comes to town and the offensive line is healthy? I do need to see that to believe it, but it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. Make sense?
Absolutely.
Frank, you know, I appreciate this. Glad your phone is worm-free. Talk again soon.
Too easy, man.
Like stealing with Frank. Clint, I think I told you this, but I haven't told YP, you people out there in listener land. A very sad thing happened maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
I do not.
I broke the fourth wall. And I met, and I met Frank, right?
I didn't know where you were going with this.
I broke the fourth wall down, and Frank and I met in person. And now when he calls, I could picture his face, and I know what he looks like. And we shook hands, so I understand what the grasp is like. You know, the whole nine. And it kind of, I don't want to say that it tarnished it, but here's what I do know. Every single time, without fail, that somebody comes to the Tap Room River Ranch or a live remote that I'm doing, I promise you, whether they say it or not, I could see it in their eyes. I never look like what they thought I looked like. Frank, I didn't know what he looked like, but it wasn't what I thought. So I get what that feeling is like. But I broke down the fourth wall. I hope the magic's not gone. I know it's too easy when he calls in. I just hope we didn't. I hope, yeah, it is too easy. But I hope we didn't lose the magic because I broke the fourth wall down. And after 4.5 years, Frank and I are now on facial recognition basis.
What a time to be alive, Ben.
I think it's good. I think it could be good. I'm open for the idea that it could be good. I just didn't expect it, right? I mean, the mystique was out there for a while, but I broke that bad boy down. All right, let's get to the final word of this 4 o'clock hour.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Tremendous. Now 3 weeks in to our Prep Power Hour CD, 341 people have showed up at Pete's. St. Thomas More was awesome last night. You combine STM, Turlings, and Southside, we've had 341 people blow that place up. So as much as we all love college and pro football, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that high school football ain't king. The support, the people, it's absolutely tremendous. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back with Chandler Rome. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. I'm Ben Love, and you're listening to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. For the next hour, we're going to have some fun. The famous Kalindi in tow from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We got a big hour coming at you. A lot of great guests. A couple of great topics as well. And then it's Five Guys Stories and Lies from 6 to 8. Then the Coach Ed Ogeron Show, 8 to 9. Following that, we'll join Astro Launch in progress before the Stros at the Mariners at 9 p.m. And speaking of the Houston Astros, I told you a fib earlier. I forgot that our man, he wouldn't be in H-Town. He's out there in the home of grunge music. Let's go out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline, and it is Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle live from Seattle. How are you, Chandler?
I'm doing well. Been one of my favorite cities, and it's like 61 degrees. It's beautiful.
Is it raining right now?
It is not raining. The sun is out. It's a beautiful day. It is the most un-Seattle type of day you could imagine.
I love hearing that. And everybody following the Astros, love what they have been doing. 103-54, that win total matches last year's total, and now they're going for a sweep of the Mariners. They've won 8 of 10. Zach Greinke on the mound tonight, 7-1 since coming over. How do you evaluate the way he's pitched, and how does he complement the two aces of this staff?
Yeah, so I think he's pitched fine. I think there's somewhat of a distorted view maybe from fans and people that watch the team because Zach Greinke's got kind of the unenviable task of following Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole every time he starts. And I don't know if there was this kind of thought or if people expected Zach Greinke to come in and be just like Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole, but Zach Greinke's a completely different cat entirely. He pitches to contact. He'll get strikeouts every now and then, but he's more of a command pitcher. He relies on finesse and putting the ball exactly where he wants. He's not going to blow it by anybody, and he's going to give up some hits. And as a result, you know, in a couple of his outings as an Astro, he's a guy that if he makes one little mistake or if his command's just a little bit off, then he's not going to maybe have, you know, an excellent outing. It's just going to be okay. And he's had some just okay starts for the Astros, and he's had some good starts for the Astros. But he's come over. I think he's got like a 3.3 or 3.1 ERA, which for a third starter, anybody would take that. And you have to know just kind of Zach Greinke's career and what sort of precedes him. I mean, his reputation is bar none as far as, you know, the legacy he's left already in baseball and what's to come. So I think it's been good. I think it has been a little bit overshadowed by what Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole are doing, but I think Zach Greinke's actually kind of just fine with that. He's fine with kind of being that third guy and going out there and doing his job. And but it's all about command with him. And if his command's just a little bit off, it could be a kind of a taxing outing. But when he's on, when he's painting the corners and when he's able to use all of his pitches effectively, he is just as effective, if not better, than Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole.
The awards-related question, Chandler, that's sweeping the country, Verlander or Cole for AL MVP?
For AL MVP?
I'm so sorry, AL Cy Young. I just made up that one. It's AL Cy Young.
I mean, you could make a case for both of those guys somewhat to get MVP votes, but I think they're going to be in the Cy Young race. I don't know, man. What Gerrit Cole has done the last month and a half, 2 months has just been unbelievable. And it's about as neck and neck right now as you can get. With those two guys, and they've each got one start left. And honestly, if either one of them falters in the last start, it may decide the award. I don't have a vote, kind of inside baseball here, but the Houston Chronicle kind of amended our newsroom rules to say we can't vote for awards anymore. And at first I was a little upset, because I enjoy voting for awards, but now that we're down to it in the MVP debate as well as the Cy Young debate, I'm happy I don't have votes in this, so I don't know which way I would go. I think, though, the one thing I will say, if Gerrit Cole does end up not winning Cy Young and coming in second, we can all point back to a start in April in Arlington where he gave up a career-worst 9 earned run in 4 innings against the Rangers. Hindsight is 2020 and everything, but it may be a case where that one start may have cost him the Cy Young, because that's how dead even these two guys are. You have to pick numbers and pick hairs, and you just wonder if that start in Arlington goes a little bit differently. Maybe some numbers are a little bit lower, and he's kind of the clear winner over Justin Verlander. But right now, it may be too close to call him. It's definitely going to come down to each of these guys' pitches again in the final four-game series in Anaheim. It'll come down to that start for both of them.
Amazing. I mean, literally 22, 23 weeks ago, that start that you're referring to. Chandler Roman, the Houston Chronicle, our guest. And let me recalibrate. Those guys were Cy Young candidates. They still are. In the MVP race, maybe Alex Bregman is starting to become a real contender. One thing we know is this. He's become the first Astro since 06 to hit 40 home runs. How did a guy who certainly had power at LSU become a consistent, even more prolific power source in Major League Baseball?
I mean, he's got his stroke perfected, and just how he approaches the baseball and how his pitch selection is just down to a science. He's a guy, he's drawing 110 or so walks. I mean, not going to swing at bad pitches. He's going to swing at pitches he knows he can drive. He gets backspin on the ball. He's a guy that, he's not going to hit these mammoth 450-foot home runs. You saw last night his 40th home run barely got it over the wall, but they all count. And some of his home runs are like that, but he's able to pull the ball on a line with a little bit of backspin to left field, and it works out for him. The Crawford boxes have helped him out. But, I'm surely going to say that this is a guy that when he was drafted out of LSU, everybody knew the pedigree and everyone knew the work ethic and everyone knew all of that. But I think even people in the Astros organization didn't envision this sort of power surge coming from him. And he certainly has turn this MVP discussion into a debate. This was something that for 5 months all you heard was that Mike Trout was going to win the American League MVP, and for all the right reasons. And then nobody would have debated that. But Trout being out these last 3 weeks, and Bregman, if he just keeps playing kind of to the standard he's been playing in the second half, he's certainly a guy that's fast charging. It's a guy that he's going to steal some first place votes, and you never know how it goes. The Astros could have a Rookie of the Year, a Cy Young Award winner, and an American League MVP, and that's never happened in baseball history.
Chandler, for those especially that are just starting to follow pro baseball, right? They're interested in the postseason. Handicap how the matchups could fall in terms of the teams in the AL. Houston, the Yankees have both clinched their divisions. They're vying for best overall record. After that, Minnesota, Oakland, Tampa, Cleveland are going to fight for the three remaining spots. I guess, who could Houston end up seeing in the first round?
Yeah, so if the Astros do end up clinching the one seed and the best record in the American League, which they can do as early as tomorrow if some stuff happens with the Yankees, they'll face the winner of the American League wild card game, which as of this moment, would be the Oakland A's versus the Tampa Bay Rays. But the Indians are only a half game out of that second wild card spot. So between those three teams, if the Astros are able to get the one seed, then they'll play one of those three teams, either the A's, the Rays, or the Cleveland Indians. And then the Yankees ostensibly would be the number two seed. They'd play the Minnesota Twins, who are probably going to wrap up the American League Central here in a couple of days. And then after that, it's kind of the collision course everybody's been waiting for. It seems like if both the Yankees and the Astros get past their first-round matchups, it'll be a Yankees-Astros ALCS, which is what a lot of people have wanted for about 3 or 4 months now. It's kind of been the buildup is kind of leading to that. And they're the two best teams in the American League without really a shadow of a doubt. And all they got to do is kind of finish out their season to get past the first their respective division series matchup. And, I mean, a lot of people think the winner of that American League Championship Series, if it manifests that way, a lot of people think that could be the World Series winner. So certainly a collision course going on right now with the Yankees, but the Astros will have to take care of business in the DS first.
Another moment or two with Chandler Rome live from Seattle, Washington. We spoke about the starting rotation. I would imagine that it goes Verlander, Cole, Greinke once this team gets to the playoffs. Could you see them going to Miley as a fourth starter, or is it background to Verlander? What's your gut tell you now?
So Wade Miley's not had a very good September at all. In his last, in three of his last four starts, he hasn't gotten out of the first inning. It's just not been good, and he hasn't inspired much confidence that he's a guy they can go out there and trust in a game four situation. But he'll start again tomorrow in Anaheim, and that's kind of his last ditch sort of audition to kind of solidify his spot in the rotation for a postseason berth. And if he has a subpar outing tomorrow in Anaheim, it'd be tough for the Astros to justify using him as a fourth starter. So there's a couple of things they could do if they get to that point. They could bring Justin Verlander back on 3 days rest to start a potential game four, especially in the ALDS. But, you know, the ALDS is best of five. You may not even need a game four start. But you get to the ALCS, certainly you could bring Verlander back on 3 days rest. You could do a bullpen game of sorts. They've got a rookie that they really like that's up here right now named Jose Urquidy. It's going to start on Friday in Anaheim. He's pitched really well since coming out to the big leagues. He's a guy that if they want to swap just starter for starter, you may think he's a guy that maybe could take Wade Miley's place on the postseason roster and just start him in game four and have the bullpen kind of ready to go, because you never know how a rookie's going to react to that sort of situation. But a lot of fluidity right now in the fourth spot. And that's why tomorrow in Anaheim and then again on Friday in Anaheim, those are probably the two most important games on this road trip to see if Wade Miley can kind of correct what's going wrong and then see if Jose Urquidy can keep up. And after that, the Astros have a decision to make as to what they want to do in that fourth spot.
Chandler, if I were to suggest, that the bullpen is the only potential kryptonite for this team heading into the playoffs, you would agree or disagree?
Yeah, I would agree. The only thing I will kind of say is when you look at postseason baseball, A.J. Hinch used three relievers last year in the American League Division Series to sweep the Indians. He used three relievers. And the Astros have three relievers that they trust in Will Harris, Ryan Pressly, and Roberto Osuna. With the way Cole, Verlander, and Greinke pitch, you assume that they're going to get you deep into a game, deeper than more conventional starters will. So the Astros feel good about those three guys. I think they would feel a lot better if they could have a fourth and a fifth guy that they really, really trusted. I don't think they have that right now, and I think that's where the worry comes in. Is this one of the three guys you trust has an off day or an off night, and then you face with going to a couple of guys that have pitched well but have been really inconsistent in the middle of that bullpen. I think that's where the Astros are probably the most vulnerable. But they're confident that with how deep Verlander and Cole and Greinke can get you into the game, that they feel confident that they can kind of ride with what they have in the bullpen. But I do think that once you get past Harris, Osuna, and Pressly, the bullpen is that's kind of their weak spot. That's their weak spot going into the playoffs. But I don't think anyone associated with the Astros would admit that. I think they say they have the best team in baseball.
Just about 4 hours from this moment, Stros will take on Seattle on the road. With the win, they will claim 104 for the season. That's a franchise record for a regular season. Chandler, thanks for helping us break it down. Enjoy your time out there.
All right, thanks, Jim.
He is Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. So many interesting possibilities, Clint. I think we meant to take a break. We'll come back and discuss some of them, but I do want to get to my book it predictions, as many as we can fit in, and then, Clint, I'll let you evaluate how some are going. Some are comically wrong. Some are still very much in the balance, but Chandler has given us certainly some things to think about. While we're talking a little baseball, I saw this go across the bottom ticker of the TV screen behind you, amigo. Did I just see that the Red Sox are interested in acquiring, maybe I should say reacquiring, Theo Epstein? What?
Bold strategy, Cotton.
Okay, so he helps Boston get the monkey off of its back. He goes to the Cubs, does the same, yep. And now they want him back. I'm just sick of the Sox. I'm kind of sick of the Cubs. Thank God for the Astros. All right, Quick break, then we'll be right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Hopefully you never get sick of us. On Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
20 minutes after 5 o'clock, back in with more of the good stuff. Our next scheduled interview, about 25 minutes from right now. Billy Embody talking LSU football. Between now and then, we got some shade in the next segment. And we're about to review some of my book it predictions from the preseason. But just briefly, follow up on the interview with Chandler Rome, Jose Urquidy potentially being a game four starter, whether it's in the ALDS, the ALCS. Hadn't considered that. So an audition for him later this week, and in between an audition for Wade Miley. So one last chance for the Astros to get things right, or maybe they will be a little thinner in that bullpen. All right, Clint, you basically have been begging for this for the last couple of days. And so we're going to give it to you, and we're going to give it to the people, because that's what we're about. I gave four book it predictions, college football and the NFL, and I try not to just give you the easy stuff. But, hey, here's one where I think I actually did okay. On the college football side, I think it might just mean more this year in the college football playoff. Two SEC teams make the playoff again. How's that looking right now, Clint? I think there are five SEC teams in the top eight. Am I wrong? I think it's Bama, Georgia, LSU, Florida, Auburn. Yep. There's at least one pretender there, but there are at least three really good teams there
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. There's three really good teams in there. I think two teams made the college football playoff, and a lot of it has to do with one of your other predictions that we'll talk about probably in a second.
Oh, well, you know, why don't we just go right there, because I think I smell what you're cooking. And, yeah, this guy at receiver for LSU, he's really darn good, and I kind of thought he might be. You can book it. Ja'Marr Chase will lead LSU in receiving yards and receiving touchdowns for his efforts. The Rummel Raider, the NOLA native, will become a second-team All-SEC performer. And let me remind you that it's not a good league for receivers with Jerry Jeudy at the top. It is a great league between Jeudy, Jalen Waddle. Look, that's just Bama. This is an incredible year for wide receivers in the conference down south. Your boys looking pretty smart right now. Oh, but we could change that real fast, so why don't we do that? I also thought that Auburn, currently a top eight team in the country, would be going down in the opener, and Oregon beats Auburn in the opener this weekend. The combination of Oregon getting back toward the top of the college football world. Washington, Chris Peterson's team, went to the playoffs a few years back. Utah, maybe a revamped UCLA squad under Chip Kelly. The Pac-12 is going to gain some more respect this year. But ultimately, especially with those two SEC teams at the Final Four table, there won't be a seat at the college football table for the Pac-12. Can't be right all the time, Clint.
I think that one was that you definitely made a wrong decision there. I think it's safe to say I'll be playing this for quite some time with a lot of these other predictions.
Not quite
you
as
chose poorly.
Yeah, I did choose poorly. Look, that one's not quite as bad as a few that I had in the NFL. We'll get to those momentarily. So, look, to be an idiot savant, you have to be both of those words. And so, you know, I can live up to that billing anytime you need me to. I'm not going to play my full Travis Etienne wins the Heisman clip for you, but let's just say that's looking, unlikely. He's having a good year, right? The Jennings native, 395 yards on the ground, 4 rushing touchdowns, and more than 10 yards per reception through the air. But with all of the quarterbacks just slinging it across the yard, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, I mean, studs everywhere, it was always a long shot that a running back would win it. Probably not looking great there. All right, my esteem is plummeting, Clint. Let's send it skyrocketing back up at least momentarily. I went in on the Saints, and I felt pretty good that not one but two players, not named Cam Jordan, would have an impact behind the line of scrimmage. Book it. Book it that Marcus Davenport and Trey Hendrickson together combined for 13 sacks. A lot of people focused in on what the second-year player out of Texas San Antonio is going to do. And I do like Davenport's future, but a lot of people also who have been covering this team closely believe that Trey Hendrickson, arguably, has been the most valuable defensive player through this month of August. Does that always translate? Not necessarily. But with Sheldon Rankins coming back sooner than later, with Malcolm Brown looking good on the interior, with some more help inside, and obviously you play opposite of an all-pro in Cam Jordan, I think that other defensive end spot, the one that used to be Davenport and Okafor, now it's Davenport and Hendrickson, combined I think they get you to 13 sacks. So you're not reliant on just what Davenport can do. But I think combined, they showcase a whole lot of strength. See, I was waiting for me to shut up there. Is that what it's like throughout Acadiana? Man, I just got a little glimpse of that for a second there. That was kind of terrifying. But yes, they've got to combine 4 sacks right now. And Hendrickson leads the entire team with 3. So I'm feeling pretty good about that one. But again, this thing can go up and down in a hurry. I also thought that the biggest bounce-back team this year in the NFL, at least on the AFC side, would be Jacksonville. Jacksonville Jaguars win the AFC South and make it to the AFC title game, at least matching what they did 2 years ago. Oh, boy. Didn't understand that Nick Foles would be injured as quickly as he was. Didn't know Jalen Ramsey would want to throw punches at his coaches. Now he's out with a quote-unquote back injury today. That one ain't looking good. I did say San Fran would be most improved on the NFC side.
Yes, he did.
I'm okay there.
Yeah,
but Jacksonville, oh boy, Samsonite. And I was also pretty darn wrong here. That guy, Pat Mahomes, he won the MVP last year. I thought he would take a step back, and here's how it sounded. Pat Mahomes throws less than 40 touchdowns this year. CD, remind him, book it, and they can do that. He threw 50 last year. I've got him closer to 37 or 38 this year. There has to be regression there. There has to be, right? They could still be a very good team. I think they will be. I don't like him as one of the league's 3 best. I don't have him as a team that's definitely getting into the AFC title game. But I do think that Pat Mahomes takes a step back, albeit another winning season for Andy Reid and the Chiefs. No, Ben, there doesn't have to be regression, and he might be at 38 touchdowns by halftime of week 4.
He is actually at 10 touchdowns right now. It's amazing to see.
He had 4 and a quarter last week.
4 and a quarter last week. I believe week 1, he had like 20 of them in week 1 just by itself. That was an amazing ballgame to watch.
Oh, God. So, you know, you put predictions out there on the line, and sometimes that limb breaks and you fall with it.
At least you're willing to take it like a champ, you know?
Always. You got to own it.
Not like some people, whenever old takes exposed, just retweets it months later.
I'm batting about 500 right now. So
it's not bad.
Basically put me in Cooperstown. All right, we're halfway through our 5 o'clock hour. Going to throw some shade next. Felt like we just did that. But we got a little different agenda this time out. Baker Mayfield taking aim at Rex Ryan. That, then an interview with Billy Embody at 5:45. Stick with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
And also eliminate the...
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Coming down the home stretch on a hump day. Ben Love, the famous Clint D, getting you over the hump and toward the end of a bye week for LSU football, closer to the end of, well, the first five games of the season before the Raging Cajuns get to a bye. But they've got a huge one still this Saturday at Georgia Southern, and the Saints, the furthest thing from a bye week. They've got the white-hot Dallas Cowboys coming to town for Sunday night football. We've been talking a lot about all of those programs, franchises, and more. Even got an update live from H-Town. Chandler Rome on the Houston Astros, three-time AL West defending champs. And we got an interview coming up with Billy Embody on the other side of our next break. But all of that so far, heck, that's just future talk. We got some very interesting waters to dive into the deep end of. I'm pretty excited about this. I love an opportunity to mention Baker Mayfield, to mention Rex Ryan, and one of them slams the other. So buckle up. You're about to get plenty of that. But first, it's your reminder, locally it's a PSA, that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. You can also trust management top down. It starts with Mark. Talked with him recently. They're excited to sit down with you, create a vision, formulate it, and then fulfill that dream before the Super Bowl. And they could do that for you. They're ready to up your patio game. All it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
This is just too good to be true. It's just manna falling from the heavens, Clint, when you do a daily segment called Throwing Shade. Baker Mayfield asked about Rex Ryan saying that he is overrated as hell. So let us recap here. Rex Ryan, who, yeah, he did lead Captain Butt Fumble and the Jets to some pretty deep playoff runs in the AFC. I guess he knows some things. He coached the Buffalo Bills to just abject mediocrity. And now he's an analyst on the mothership. And Rex Ryan said Baker Mayfield, quote unquote, overrated as hell. You think Baker's going to take that lying down? You, my friend, don't know Baker Mayfield. His exact response earlier this afternoon, quote, it's whatever. If you don't wear orange and brown, you don't matter. And Rex Ryan doesn't have any colors right now for a reason, end quote. Clint, I said it with so much emphasis, I put a D on the end of the word reason. That's amazing to me. And the guy's got a ton of moxie. I think a lot of coaches, GMs, owners would prefer their guys just shut up and play football, but they don't mind if they can back it up. So far, I would say this. Baker, with a better supporting cast, hasn't exactly been backing it up. But I like this type of moxie. I'm not going to lie to you. I get the first part of the statement. You're not with us. You're against us. But then he just throws a poison dart with the second stanza. Rex Ryan doesn't have any colors right now for a reason. Let me translate that. Sit your ass on the sideline.
Stay in your lane. That's basically what Baker Mayfield's talking about. And I absolutely love the fact that you brought it up perfectly. The dude has that moxie. And I think that really helps that team as a whole. Now, mind you, a lot of it needs to kind of have, I'd say, almost Baker Mayfield calling his own play sometimes. Because honestly, 4th and 9 ain't going to cut it on a QB draw. I think they need to wind up probably figuring that out, because I think this guy has tons of moxie, and the more these kind of situations happen, the more we'll hear guys like Rex Ryan and other ex-players and coaches bury the kid.
And, you know, while I tell you that I like the moxie, you're right. Ultimately, the best way to silence critics is to do it on the field, right? To do it with your arms, your legs, and do it when the lights come on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday. So this is a team that now has Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield, even Freddie Kitchens, a little bit of a soundbite, from time to time as the head coach. They're not going to be afraid to come out and tell you what they're thinking, but coming out and winning some ball games, ultimately, Yeah, I'd say that's going to be pretty important for the Cleveland Browns. But Baker Mayfield not afraid to come out and challenge Captain Foot Fetish. Oh, you thought we forgot?
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Perhaps that wasn't as subtle as it sounded in my head, right? The whole shade was about Baker toward Rex Ryan, and then your boy comes in and remembers the foot fetish and the toe stuff. We probably all could have done without those mental images that I just forced you to regurgitate.
Yeah, during the break, I'm going to go to the bathroom and try and just forget all those altogether. Might have some induced vomiting. Just thinking about that.
Bulimia is a real problem in America, Clint. So I, yes. You know, if
it's not a bad look.
No, bulimia is a bad look. Yeah. But getting that Rex Ryan taste out of your mouth, it might just be something you have to do. Hey, this isn't shade worthy. It's basically the opposite. But I find myself with a moment before we flip it to a break, and then we bring aboard Billy Embody to go deep on LSU football. Did you see who retweeted our show lineup yesterday? This is completely and utterly random at first glance, but then you study it for a little bit and you kind of get it a little more. And that last word I said should have given you a hint. Did you see who? And I could see you feverishly scouring. You know what? You don't get the answer. Because you're cheating. I told you that it might make sense a little more, and that's because Coy Moore retweeted the show lineup yesterday. LSU commit out of Rummel. And I had to think on that for a little bit. Now you can turn your mic back on because I want to get your take on this. I think I really concocted the perfect Coy Moore Twitter trap yesterday when you consider who was coming on the show.
Yeah.
Because I saw that retweet and I'm like, we've never had Coy on the program. Yes, we had his former quarterback, Chandler Fields, who's now with Billy Napier and the Raging Cajuns. Yep. But I haven't even interviewed. I've never met Coy before. I said, okay, you had Shea on. That's step one.
Yeah.
That dude's got like 16,000 Twitter followers, and every kid who's ever played football in the state of Louisiana is one of them. So step one.
Yep.
But step two, Ken Trahan. You know we have him on to talk Saints. That dude is like the Don, maybe alongside my guy Ed Daniels of New Orleans prep football coverage. And so I kind of thought about that a little bit. Okay, all right, he might have had a little bit of lean toward old Ken Trahan / Trahan.
A fish was let to water, basically.
Yeah, well, and there might have been one other little bait that I didn't intend to at first. St. Thomas Moore. I don't know how much he was fixated on Cougars football, but if you look at the three things that I tagged on the program yesterday, it was Shea Dixon, Ken Trahan, and then the Prep Power Hour with SDM football. I think I concocted a perfect Coy Moore Twitter chat. And so, to Coy, respect. Hope things are well in the Big Easy. A lot of LSU fans excited to see you soon. Just figured our listeners ought to know that. All right, we're going to break it down one final time when we return. Billy Embody and then his five guys, stories and lies. And you get it all on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in one final time on a hump day. We've been talking a lot of football, having fun. It's kind of what we do in our DNA. Our next guest, same thing. He likes to have fun and talk football. Let's go find him. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. And it is Billy Embody, go247.com. Billy, how the heck are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Hey, life is good here. I know this about you, brother. You answer the call no matter what the situation, no matter what. So I will say this. I hope you're at least one person's emergency contact because you will save a life one day. I feel pretty good about that, Billy.
It's a problem when the phone's always on, I guess. One day I'll get away from it.
You answer it for recruiting. You answer it for LSU, SMU, the Washington Redskins. You're a busy, busy dude. You know we appreciate the time. It's a bye week for LSU. A lot of talk about injuries, when some of the guys are coming back. One thing we do know Ed Ingram is already back. Put into perspective, if you don't mind, his return, what that does to the starting lineup and then the depth for James Craig's group.
Yeah, it's huge. He's somebody that started 12 games as a true freshman in the SEC, and just getting a look at him yesterday in practice, you can tell that he's stayed in shape. He's athletic looking. He's looking like he's grown up a good bit. I mean, gosh, he's been suspended for a year, and he's now a third year sophomore in the program. So he's put in a lot of work to stay in shape, ready for this moment, and you can just kind of tell he enjoyed being back out there. So from a confidence perspective, which is something that Ogeron mentioned, he's going to bring a lot to the table.
Talking LSU football with Billy Embody. So the offensive line get a little healthier at receiver. They'll be without one of the big guns, certainly in terms of size and stature, the biggest in the Big Three. Without Terrace Marshall, I think Racy McMath is the biggest name to watch. But I know Stephon Sullivan's moving out there as well. Handicap that for our listeners, if you don't mind. The guys that will help fill in for Marshall for the next month, maybe a little more.
Yeah, Ogeron mentioned Stephon Sullivan yesterday when we spoke with him, but I'm with you. I think Racy McMath, the way he played against Vanderbilt and kind of some limited snaps and having an impact and kind of growing into his role as an older guy now on the roster, I would say, has been key. And he's played a lot of football. He was a special teams, stalwart, for LSU the last 2 years. And so he's not coming in just cold off the bench and trying to learn how to play football at the college level. He's played a lot. So I like Racy to step in. I think he's got some explosiveness to him that Stephon Sullivan doesn't have. And Ed Ogeron mentioned the big catch radius of him, but I'm still waiting for Stephon Sullivan to kind of break out. And with Thad Moss taking that starting tight end spot from him, I think that kind of says a little bit more about, I think his ability to actually impact the offense.
When you look at the defensive side, Michael Divinity, Coach O said within the last 24 hours, might actually be back for that Utah State game. Perhaps the same for Rashard Lawrence. I guess how would you look at maybe the importance of those two, Caleb Vaughn, Chase Saul, the importance of some of these guys coming back? You don't necessarily have to rank it, but just these pieces to the puzzle for Dave Aranda. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think the biggest keys are Caleb Vaughn, Chase Saul, and Michael Divinity. Whenever those two get healthy again and return to the field, they need a pass rush. They need to be able to put pressure on the quarterback, and it's something they haven't really been able to do very well. So when those two return, that'll be the key. Because I think Tyler Shelvin's emergence, Joe Evans has started to play. They have Braden Fajoco. They have some of those other guys that can play some downs for him. But I think the biggest thing this defense is lacking and what they're going to need to get after Tua Tagovailoa, to get after the Florida passing game and then Bo Nix at Auburn. I mean, they're going to, and Kellen Mond at A&M, they're going to have to put pressure on the quarterback. And otherwise, it's going to be similar to Texas where they're going to be able to sit back there and pick where they want to go with the football.
Talking LSU football with Billy Embody, go247.com. The way that the schedule lines up, I think it's, just brilliant. Whether Virge Osborne and company meant it this way or not, four games a bye week, and then you finish with four more. So this LSU team with a chance to get right prior to home games against Florida and Auburn in the month of October. Just how do you see the landscape in general? Those are top 10 teams. We know that. The Gators now with Kyle Trask at quarterback. Auburn with freshman Bo Nix leading the way. How do you look at this month to come?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it kind of breaks up into four-game seasons pretty much. And look, LSU's focused on week to week, and that's kind of how they've approached things under Ed Ogeron. But it matches up really well for LSU. I'm not sold on Florida being a top 10 team. I'm sorry. I don't see it, but they're going to have to take care of business and beat a team that's beat them, two straight years. So they're going to have to take care of business against them and get back on the right side of that rivalry game. Because look, all this is great. You beat Texas, you do this, do that, set records. But if you lose SEC games and have to go into Alabama as a must win and do all that, it's just not going to matter. It's all going to be for naught. So they've got to circle the wagons and get refocused. Because I think it's been an emotional stretch for them. I think, having the Texas game be what it was and then come back against Northwestern State and kind of start sluggish, and then an 11 a.m. game against Vanderbilt, your defense is kind of porous a little bit at times. They needed this bye week to get ready for Utah State and one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and then to get ready for for Florida, and then from there, get ready for some other SEC games, and then you welcome Auburn. And there's just a lot to do, it seems like, in these four-game stretches, but they do set up really well.
Another moment or two with Billy Embody. Give me a little bit more, your opinions of the SEC so far this season. You just spoke somewhat on Florida, on Auburn. What's your make so far on Texas A&M on one side and then Georgia on the other? So a couple teams that we all thought had a chance to be pretty good this year, maybe one more than the other. A&M lost a home game to Auburn this week. Georgia won a home game versus Notre Dame. Your thoughts on the Aggies and the Bulldogs?
Yeah, I think Texas A&M is still kind of finding their way. I'm not necessarily sold on Jimbo Fisher's ability to fix the culture that Kevin Sumlin had in place at Texas A&M, which wasn't really much of one. And it kind of got willy-nilly there definitely at the end. So I'm not sure he was the perfect fit to come in and win right away. They've had success. They beat LSU last year, don't get me wrong. But right now they are trying to find their way, and I think a lot of it goes back to the culture. And so when Texas A&M rolls into Baton Rouge late this year, I think LSU is going to have a really good opportunity to win by 10 points and, you know, double digits and kind of handle business, no matter what they're kind of facing late in that season in terms of ability to put themselves either in the college football playoff or in the SEC title game or what have you. I just don't see right now that A&M is necessarily headed in the right direction with the group that they have. They're recruiting really well, but just right now, I just don't see how it's trending down a positive road. Georgia, on the other hand, I like Jake Fromm. I don't care what he did in Tiger Stadium last year. I think that was more of a product of their play calling, getting off of what they normally should be doing, which is running the football, playing physical, and not putting it in the hands of Jake Fromm. And that's not to take away anything from him. I think he's a great game manager at the, you know, elite level of college football. But I thought Georgia's win over Notre Dame was a lot closer than I thought it would be. I don't know if they're necessarily a national championship type team this season, but they're a very good team, and they've got a veteran quarterback. And whenever you've got that at the helm, as we're seeing with LSU, you can beat a lot of people.
Always great to have you aboard. And I remember like it was yesterday. It was more than a year or two ago when you called me and were asking about coming into this market. You had already accomplished a bunch. It's great to have you in BR and in South Louisiana. I hope you're really enjoying it, man.
Oh, man, I'm loving it. It's been 4 years now. It's been 4 years.
I am old. Billy, you know I appreciate you, brother. Enjoy your night.
You too. Thanks for having me.
That was fun, and I do remember that phone call. All right, we got to get out of here. Lot of fun today. Our hats off, and thanks to Cousin Dino, Chandler Rome, talking Houston Astros baseball, and you just heard from Billy Embody. Those are three guys, five guys. Stories and Lies, they're coming up next. Don't go anywhere. You got plenty of goods left today. Tomorrow, I'll be live from the Taproom River Ranch for a little more Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.